OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow.
Guy Breen is with us. Guy, good morning to you.
Good morning.
What's your level of anxiety about what might happen with Ireland against this England team tonight?
Oh, listen, I understand in terms of the problems we're having in terms of trying to get our best team out. I know that the strength and depth that England have, regardless of what team they select. So, yeah, it is a worry. But to be perfectly honest, just trying to want to see the bigger picture in terms of Stephen Kenny really stamping his authority on the squad, the philosophy. I know it's been a difficult one for him. There's been no calm waters for him ever since he took over the job. So I kind of not looking at it like I would have maybe done if it was a big qualifier or a game against England in a major championships.
We had Vinnie Perth on yesterday. He was making the point that, oddly enough, given that it's not a competitive game, while it's England at Wembley, it might actually not be the most important of the games over the course.
Yeah.
And victory in either of the other two games and avoiding defeat in the other one would be much more important for them. So in a way, it was brave, and I can see why you would take the friendly, because obviously, you know, you've got to build relationships, and hopefully England will come whenever we can have crowds again. It'll be a bumper payday for the FAI. But there is a possibility we get spanked tonight.
Yeah, listen, and I actually heard Vinny saying that, and it's true that England are capable of doing it to some of the top teams in the world if they click on the evening. So that is a concern. But those players should be thinking like that. I heard Seamus Coleman's bullish cry to the rest of the team to not to have an inferiority complex, to play on the front foot. And that's good. You'd expect them from a captain. He's a great leader of our team. But there's no doubt that if you're making a decision based or predicting one with your head as opposed to your heart, then we are vulnerable, there's no doubt. But I totally agree with that. I think in terms of the seeding for the World Cup draw, our position so precarious at the moment that even these three games are massive in terms of how it affects that, whether or not we become second or third seeds. So that is a concern. But there's no doubt that you're probably looking at the Wales and Bulgaria games as ones that are of more importance in terms of going forward. But of course, when you're playing England, it always grabs the attention. The only thing is, on this year, this one, I don't know, for some reason it really hasn't. Maybe it's the hastily rearranged game that we didn't have any build-up in terms of anticipation, the fact that there's no fans there. I mean, that's the big one. But even listening to some of the younger lads, Ger, and I noticed that kind of like subtly in the build-up to this game, that maybe they don't put England, the game against England, on a pedestal in a way that people of our generation probably do. And I wonder if that is indicative now of the younger generation of Ireland fans, that you know, it's not something that they really go on about as much as probably we did. And certainly, as a young kid growing up, those games against England in the late 80s, early 90s were iconic games, they really were. And but I wonder if that is just a sign of the time. Certainly it was for me growing up in London as an Irish boy.
I think probably because Euro 88 is so iconic and we win.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, no, yeah. And it's probably the fact that those pioneers go onto the world stage and literally explode onto the stage. And obviously their first game is against England. But I don't know. Even talking about tonight's game, Joe, and that inferiority complex, even those games that against England in 88 where, you know, probably the media was so dismissive of Ireland. But the reality was we were so competitive, because I was looking back at that line thinking that even that game in 88, we had three Liverpool title winners in it. England only had two. And then I'm probably looking at my position at centre-half and I'm thinking, well, we've got the likes of, in and around that time, we've got the likes of Mark Lawrence and David O'Leary, Paul McGrath. I mean, they're at the very worst the equals of the likes of Adams, Walker and Mark Wright. And they're not even our first-choice centre-halves at the time. So, you know, we although people had us down as the underdogs back then, we were such a good team.
I think that definitely helped. I do want to ask you about Joe Gomez before we get back into what's going to happen tonight.
Yeah.
It looks like an injury in training and international duty, every manager's favourite type of injury, is going to put him out for quite a period of time. In and of itself, on its own, in isolation, not that big a deal for Liverpool. But coming on the back of the Virgil injury, this is actually a massive problem for Liverpool now.
That's a huge problem. It really is. And I mean, I don't know the extent, but obviously I heard the breaking news straight away yesterday and I thought, well, you didn't know what it was. Now, if it's been confirmed a knee injury, then that is a real concern, because you know, you pretty much know very quickly whether or not it's a bad one. Your hope then is that it's one that's just 6 weeks as opposed to 6 months in something really, really bad like Van Dijk has had. But you're right, Jurgen Klopp will be absolutely furious that this has happened, because he's someone that you would have earmarked as someone who would really pick up the slack of Virgil van Dijk, Joe Gomez. And you have to counter that with the fact that Matip is back fit, but he has a lot of injury problems. He has a lot of a niggly injury problems. So this is a concern that this will force Liverpool, I would think, to have to do some business now in January. I know they've got the young lads coming through, and that's great. And of course, people talk about their inexperience, but you can counter that by saying those young centre-halves are playing against top quality players in training, but it's still a different challenge actually playing in the Premier League as opposed to training against them brilliant Liverpool players.
Have you seen anything new, Gary, from Liverpool since the Van Dijk injury to suggest that this system can withstand a further injury? Have they changed anything to alleviate for the best defender in the world being absent? And how much can that help them now over the next couple of months? Or, well, it could be weeks or months, however long Gomez is out for as well.
Well, listen, initially, I mean, when they kind of like convert Fabinho back to that centre half, you're thinking, OK, you can see what they're going to maybe try and do. But you take someone of his experience out as well. So it does leave you so vulnerable. And I'm not sure if that Liverpool defence is designed solely by the fact that they have the best centre half in the world in Van Dijk. I genuinely think that's something that they try to do, not just because of his ability, but because they want to be pressing high, forcing turnovers high up the pitch and giving the best goal scoring opportunities on the turnover. So I'm not sure whether or not they're suddenly now going to rip up the whole game plan and defend deep, because I think as a young centre half, I think you'd probably feel more comfortable in and around the halfway line than you would in and around your box, where Premier League strikers, midfielders get in range of your goal. So I think he'll look at the scenario, because he's a brilliant manager, and he's all that Liverpool team has evolved every 5 or 6 months since Jurgen Klopp's been at the club. So if he feels he has to do something to give him the best opportunity, I wouldn't be surprised that he has, but I haven't noticed anything just yet.
The high line is going to be a talking point for sure. Like, you look at the first fixture back after the international break, it's Leicester City. Vardy going up against that high line. It's obviously a high line that he ripped to shreds against Manchester City. There's no way Klopp reconsiders that even a little bit, is there?
Well, I think he might possibly have done it anyway. It's not even what he does against Manchester City, Jamie Vardy. You remember him getting that record-breaking goal against Liverpool when he used to terrorise them as well. So I think you're quite right. He's probably just the one centre-forward that if you were looking to expose that high line, that Vardy is the one that can get you in, especially when you think about the quality they've got in midfield, that they can make those passes. But again, Jurgen Klopp will identify, well, listen, I'll keep a high line, I'll keep my midfielders right on top of there so that they can't make those passes. And that's the best way to go about it. So it will be fascinating. I'll be really intrigued to see how they do look to cope against Leicester.
The latest speculation is that it might be season ending for Joe Gomez. They're hoping that it isn't, because obviously it was non-contact, and the speculation they caught is studs in the turf, and he's already had an ACL injury.
Yeah,
in knee,
yeah.
So,
yeah. Oh, is it the same knee, Jer?
I think that's what they're saying, yeah.
Oh, that's a massive worry it is. And listen, in terms of the recovery, ACLs are not quite as troublesome as they were, you know, 10, 20 years ago. Obviously, the medical departments have improved so much, but nevertheless, it's a concern that you've got the same injury. Listen, the flip side of it, you'll say, was he's got the mental strength. He's come back from the first one. He can come back from the second one. But that is a real concern for the young man. I wish him a speedy recovery.
Let's talk about Ireland tonight. Obviously, again, COVID takes one of our strikers out. Aaron Connolly, who we're dying to see, especially now when we're not going to have McGoldrick.
McGoldrick, yeah.
He's gone again for the entire three games. Stephen Kenny hasn't had much luck, but that is also, they're the vagaries of international football, right?
Absolutely, and I was really glad to see him say yesterday to dismiss it. There's no curse. He's had some bad luck, but there's no curse. Of course there is. And that shows good leadership. It really does. And it suggests that, well, it certainly resonates throughout the rest of the squad, because if he was to go bleating on about all these players that are missing, the rest of the guys in the squad who are chomping at a bit to get their opportunity would be a little bit downhearted. But it's a great chance for all those other lads. It really is, to put a marker down. And we've seen so often in football that players who probably didn't get their chance but suddenly did and made the most of it and went from strength to strength. So, but it has been such a tough time for him, because if you think about him talking about his philosophy, Stephen Kenny, and coming into the job, every time he's about to try and nail something down, COVID and this, you know, unprecedented, I know we hear that word all the time, these unprecedented times, make it so difficult for him. It really has. And you're right. You probably look at McGoldrick and think, OK, that was a bit of an upset, really, that he has retired. But it, you felt then on a positive head that you'd go, OK, well, listen, there's a spin now for the likes of Connolly to play centrally, Robinson also. And then suddenly those two guys are out so late again, bearing in mind he'd have done all his work leading into it. But listen, this is what it is. You've got to deal with it. Managers, you know, this is part of it.
So how do we play tonight?
I don't think he's going to deviate too much. I wonder whether or not Matt Doherty goes at left full now. And listen, this is someone that people say he's played at Wolves. But when he was playing left back at Wolves, that's not the player who's now one of the elite performers in the Premier League as a right wing back. So, but having said that, how comfortably he reverted to a centre-half in the last games, I have no doubt he can do it, but just don't expect him to be marauding forward like he does normally in that right-hand side. I think we'll definitely have to play the two holding midfielders as opposed to one holding midfielder that Stephen Kenny adopted when he first came into the role as manager in that kind of 4-3-3 system. I think we're too vulnerable against most teams, let alone one of the elite level teams like England, with just one holding midfielder. So he played two. Will he then look to play Alan Brown in that advanced midfield role to get in support? Does Collins play at centre forward? Gives you that physicality, that ability to hold the ball up and allow other players to get into the game. So I don't think that for this one game that he's going to try something vastly different to what he's trying to achieve, regardless of the fact that he hasn't been able to use all the players he wanted to. Because ultimately, this game and the next two are preparation for those World Cup qualifiers in March. Now, listen, this is the last window till then, and that's going to be a hectic one in itself. Whether or not we're in a 5 or 6 team group depends whether or not we'll play 3 games in that week in March or 2. So, you know, he has to nail down. And as you just said there, Jer, I think it's very unrealistic to think that you're ever going to have a settled team in international football, because the differences between the games, the months, the weeks and everything, and so much changes in that period. So I think you've got to really nail it down from throughout your squad, not just your best 1 to 11. So these guys have an opportunity to do just that.
There's speculation in the papers this morning about the relationship between Shane Long and Stephen Kenny. It is just speculation. We haven't seen anything confirmed by anybody.
Right.
But he's not in the squad. And apparently one of the reasons people are speculating about this is that Kenny's like, oh, look, Long's, as soon as he starts playing football, we'll bring him in. But he has played.
Yeah.
He's played a good bit of football compared to some of the people who are in the squad who have played no football. So
yeah, I know. You've got to be. You're right, Jay. You've got to be so careful in terms of why you explain a player's omission, because it has to add up. And whether or not he's played football or not, we know Shane Long's so fit. And if you're gonna, if that's a rule now for the rest of the squad going forward that you're not playing in your first team, you're not gonna.
We've no goalkeepers. We're left with a squad with no goalkeepers, isn't it?
And what's incredible, Jay, is like at the beginning of the season, the first couple of weeks, I probably was looking at a team that Stephen Kenny could pick probably as such at the beginning of his tenure. And 1 to 11, all those players were Premier League players.
And that was something that's been, Gary.
Yeah, well, yeah. And then suddenly, now just 8 games into the Premier League season, you've only got Doherty, Egan and Hendricks out of Stephen Kenny's first choice 11 as such, who are actually playing regularly for their team. So although he's got the issues with COVID and the withdrawals, I think he's got a bit of an issue there. And I don't think he needs to create a problem in terms of saying that scenario about Shane Long.
Yeah, I would definitely have Shane Long in my squad anyway. Like, no matter what situation we're in, the likelihood is we're going to need somebody in the last 15 minutes who's fast to stretch the opposition defence, who might get us a goal. Like, we're never going to be in. If we're defending a 1-0 lead, that's probably one of the best ways to defend it, is try and stretch them and pin them back a little bit. If we're chasing games, which, let's face it, is quite likely in the current situation, then you want to have Shane Long to come on, no?
Well, listen, I can understand that. And especially when you think about Stephen Kenny in terms of his teams and the under-21s, that centre-forward, more often than not, is the guy who stretches the pitch. They want to use that pace. You know, it's obviously Adam Eder or Connolly at times, but suddenly then McGoldrick comes in at number 9 and it does change the dynamic a little bit. People think, well, it doesn't, but it does, because he drops deep into 10 and he looks to play from there. That's when you need your runners in behind. So you're right. In terms of how he normally sets up his team, you think of Shane Long's strengths. It is playing on the shoulder of centre-halves. It is running hard and stretching the game, making the opposition defence drop. So it is an interesting one. I think Mick McCarthy probably says that he didn't play him at times because of his injuries and stuff, but that didn't really seem to add up either.
Now more than ever, Gary, it seems that it's vital for Ireland to have an identifiable system that, regardless of the personnel, we know what style of play Stephen Kenny is going to play because of the chopping and changing and the injuries and the positive tests and everything that comes with this season.
Yeah, Owen, in terms of him initially, you know, when, as a manager and you prior to getting the job, especially in the long build-up that he had for it, talked a lot about philosophy, changing the mindset of the players and certainly the kind of opinion of those players from outside. But that never really highlighted that he can be a pragmatic manager himself at times. You know what I mean? In terms of his Dundalk teams, and I've talked to people who know and I've watched his career as a manager that said, listen, if he needs to be pragmatic, he will be. But certainly this is this refocuses your thoughts because you can dream about how you want to play, but the reality is, are you able to play that way? So I understand in terms of the philosophy, yeah, that's great. Passing out from the back, I think all our players are comfortable at it because they're doing it at club level. But you still have to impact on the game. And the very fact that we've got no goal in open play in five games suggests that needs to improve. Now, listen, that's not to say that the philosophy is the reason for that. And I counter that by saying on any other given days, we could have had with five or six goals throughout those games because we had loads of chances. So that's encouraging. So I don't expect him to change the philosophy because of the problems that he's having. But I think he might need to tinker with it a little bit from the kind of idealistic approach that he had prior to actually managing Ireland.
I'm looking back at historic results here, and unless I'm missing some, it's 1980 was the last time that Ireland were beaten by England. And since then... they beat us in 85, is that right? They beat us in 85 in Wembley.
It's 35 years, isn't it, since they
beat us,
right?
That's right, 35 years. So that's right, 1985. Since then, we beat them in Stuttgart, and every other game has been a draw, six draws in a row. You know, you could say that the historical statistics would suggest that there's going to be a winner tonight because just regression to the mean. But, you know, maybe we can squeak a nil-all draw tonight and frustrate the hell out of them.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love to keep that 35-year unbeaten run going. I really would, for bragging rights, if nothing else. But it'll be a difficult challenge. I think even, like we said earlier, those four games at the end of the 80s, early 90s, we were so good. They were great battles. They really were. In fact, I listened to your interview with Tony Cascarino. It was brilliant from you two guys. It was so... he spoke so openly. It was actually hard to listen to at times, but it was a brilliant listen. But then I looked about and I was thinking about Cass. And have you guys recently seen his equaliser against England at Lansdowne?
I watched it while we were talking to him. It's amazing.
Oh, I mean, the header is brilliant. It really is. But if anyone hasn't seen it, just watch it for the crowd's reaction. That was unbelievable. It was so, the crowd, and it was as if when a ball comes into the box from Stan, that the crowd anticipated, because the noise went up a little bit. Then when he gets that brilliant header, the noise is unbelievable. And I look back and it just, I hadn't seen that goal for ages. And I probably forgot about it. But as soon as I saw it, I thought, that is exactly why I was so desperate to play for Ireland in front of the Irish fans, for that reaction. And it was just an unbelievable goal.
They should be sending round those clips to the team tonight.
Yeah.
It's a pity Shane Long's not there, you know, to see the clip of him as well. It's just I don't know. Look, it is what it is with Shane Long. I guess there's obviously something else that's going to come out in the next while. I'm not going to ask you for a prediction, but I might just ask you for a prediction. What's going to happen?
I think we're up against it. I really do. We don't know what Team England will play, but like we said, they've got such strength in depth. They've got a conveyor belt of talent. Not only one that they kind of produce themselves. They can dip into other countries' production line and take their players. But I think it'll be tough for us tonight. But nevertheless, I think these lads are always capable of producing something. They never let us down, and I'm hopeful that they can get something positive today.
Gary, enjoy the game if that's possible. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
It's Gary Breen there giving us his thoughts. We went a bit over that. It's 7 minutes past eight here. We've got some obviously brilliant duos that we've brought your way from our Cadbury FC series of remote roadshows so far, and we are wrapping up this year's version of them with an absolute stunning lineup. So far, we've had Gary Neville and Teddy Sheringham, Paddy Bonner and Shay Given, Saul Campbell and Ian Wright, Glenn Hoddle and Harry Redknapp. They were last week's The final one for 2020 is going to be Jason McAteer and Kenny Dalglish in conversation. That's coming your way from Sunday, the 15th of November. All of those pieces are, of course, available to check out on the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, is live from 7:30 every morning. Listen on the OTB Sports app or ask Alexa, Siri or Google to play OTB Sports Radio to start your day with the latest sports news and reaction. Subscribe by searching OTB AM on your podcast app.